Never underestimate what a role model can do for you. You could say that's the main theme of today's podcast. That's because our guest, Irish boxer Bronya Walsh, is the perfect example of just that. Looking at her today, we find a talented 24-year-old fighter who won bronze at the 2019 European Games, and there's plenty more to come in the future. But when we rewind back to when Bronya was 16, we find something very different. Someone with no boxing experience at all. Instead, we find a young footballer turning out for Shamrock Rovers and harbouring dreams of one day playing for Arsenal. So what changed? That would be Katie Taylor, the boxing great, who happened to open up a boxing club just across the road from Bronya's house. That chance meeting inspired her to take up the sport, and 4 years later, the two of them were on the same team. These days, Bronya is as determined as anyone to make it in her sport, and was understandably glad when the Tokyo Olympics were postponed this year after she ruptured a ligament in her thumb back in January. Lockdown has been tough on a lot of people, but this boxer is someone who sees it as a glass half full rather than a glass half empty scenario.
Bronya, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the show. I hope you've been keeping yourself well. And as I always ask with guests that we have on the show at the moment, how is lockdown life treating you? Because it's still kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks again for having me on the show. And yeah, lockdown has been great for me. I don't know, people have had kind of mixed opinions on it, but for me, I've really been enjoying it. And, you know, not being living out of a suitcase and being in Dublin all the time, I'm actually at home in my own bed, not really traveling as much. It's nice to have a bit of a break, but obviously I'm missing the competitive edge of sparring and of fighting and everything, you know, so I'd be looking forward to getting back as well, as much as I am enjoying it here. But you know, I think everyone needs to get back to normality eventually.
Yeah, exactly. Does that kind of extra time that you have in your hands allow you to focus on anything that you weren't perhaps focusing on before?
Yeah, of course. Like for me, like boxing is my full-time job and everything, because some of them are kind of working on the front line as, you know, policemen and women and then nurses and all that kind of thing. So other people are very busy. But for me, I'm just solely focusing on the little things that I didn't really usually have time for. So the small technical pieces that when you're coming up to a competition, you might just brush over because you're trying to get fitter and stronger and everything. So I've just used this time as wisely as I can, and I'm breaking everything down. So hopefully when I do get back in the ring sparring and fighting, that we'll see a bit of a difference. So only time will tell.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm glad we also got past the inevitable name pronunciation issue, which yeah. I imagine is something that is probably the first thing people say to you.
I was waiting for that. Yeah. Outside of Ireland, 99% of the time people cannot pronounce it. And like the same thing when I was at the European Games in Minsk last year. Like, I had three fights, and for every fight, they pronounced it spot on 100%. But then for the medal ceremony on the podium, grainy. So that was a bit of a low blow, but I got over it anyway. It was funny at the time, so I just had to laugh. But yeah, the pronunciation is always, for Irish names in general, it's always a bit of a hurdle.
Yeah, well, if you spell Alistair the way I spell Alistair as well, it's something I can...
Yeah, I was actually wondering.
When I was fencing in British fencing, spelt my name wrong for about 5 years.
So, oh god, I think you just get used to it.
Exactly. After it comes a point where you just accept it, and then
yeah, exactly.
I spell my name the way you spell it now. As we alluded to just before we started recording this, you're probably one of the few athletes that was happy about Tokyo 2020 being postponed this year.
Yes.
Partly because you obviously ruptured your ligament in your right thumb. Was it back in January, I think?
Back in January, yeah. So that wasn't exactly the most ideal start to an Olympic year after training so hard for like 3 years previous. I was like all set to go. I trained so hard over Christmas and everything because we were due to go to a competition called Stranja in Bulgaria on the 16th of January. And it was my last spar just before the competition. And I just threw my backhand and I actually connected really well with the shot, but the thumb just went the other way and completely, I knew I was in trouble straight away. Like, so long story short, I was obviously devastated about the whole thing, and like to come back from that when I was ready, basically fit and ready to go to a competition, to being, you know, in surgery and just being not able to do anything really. So it was really tough for the first couple of weeks. And then I kind of got back to doing more left-handed work and stuff. So that was actually, it was kind of a blessing in disguise in that sense. Like my left hand got really strong and everything. But then again, I was leaving my right hand behind. So yeah, it was kind of like, I didn't really know. It was all up in the air. And I was kind of like, oh, will I be ready to come back for the second qualifier if I get the chance? It would have been a rushed process. But obviously now, as you said, I am thankful that the Olympics is postponed, because it's given me that extra time to, like I said, work on the smaller things and get my hand right again. So I'll be able to do things 100% right.
Yeah, it must have been almost like a sense of relief then when the announcement came, because I think we all sensed it was heading that way.
Yeah, there was so much talk about it. But like, as I was saying, it's just such a big thing. The Olympics only happens every 4 years. It's the pinnacle of sport. There's so much money and time invested that to cancel it, there needs to be something serious. So no one really knew, I think, the severity of the coronavirus until everything started getting closed down and everything. Like, I knew when the pubs were closed in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day, we were in trouble. So, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, but look, it is what it is. And I think everyone has just kind of had to adapt. People are seeing it as, you know, half glass full instead of half glass empty. So, you know, everyone's just working on the smaller things and getting ready for hopefully an Olympics next year.
Am I right in saying that the ligament rupture was your first injury, your first serious injury?
Yeah, first injury ever. Like, apart from when I was playing soccer, I might have had a pulled hamstring here and there, but nothing that ever really put me out playing or fighting or anything. So,
how has rehab worked then in coronavirus times? Because I suppose you don't have that same relationship with a physio or anything like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, to be honest now, my recovery was like, quick enough, not well, like, I'd love to say quick enough, but it seemed like forever. But like all my appointments with physios and everything were when we were actually allowed in Dublin and stuff. So it wasn't my own, my last appointment with the hand therapist was the only thing that was actually cancelled. So, and that was just kind of a checkup. I'm still doing rehab now, like, because my thumb, it's like, it's great, but it's not 100% obviously compared to my left. So every night I'm still doing all my putty work and all my little exercises and stuff just to strengthen it up. And then obviously conditioning it on the bag and stuff is really helping it as well. But the real test to see how good it is when I actually spar someone and hit a person, because you can control it to an extent on the bag. But, you know, when you have a moving object in front of you, it's a moving person, it's different. Like,
mm-hmm. And I suppose this kind of comes into my next question, because planning ahead, none of us really know what's coming up in the future. So do you know when you can next spar someone, or when you can potentially get back to some sort of normality and looking forward to some competition?
Yeah, I really don't know, to be honest with you. Like I just said, we're taking every day as it comes. I'm just doing all the little things I can do right at the moment. We have a meeting on Tuesday next week with our boss to see if there's any sort of lifting of restrictions that we can return to Dublin. But you know, we stay in a hotel when we're in Dublin and all the hotels are closed. So that's going to be another thing as well, unless we go for a day and have two sessions in the day and drive home that night. But then again, people are traveling from a lot further than I am. So I don't know. It's going to take a bit of time to figure it out and a bit of trial and error as well. But like I said, boxing is just such a close contact sport. I think it will be a while before we get back doing any sparring or fighting with other countries. I think would be a big risk. So we're just kind of waiting for more updates. But as of that, that's kind of all we know at the moment.
Yeah, and there's only so much you can do right now as well. But your training regime at the moment is, having seen some of the previous pieces about you on the internet as well, there's a lot of unique aspects to it. There's the ping pong side of it, which is proving quite useful, it would seem.
Yeah.
In terms of reaction stuff. And it looks like you've got an audience of essentially Christmas light up.
Definitely.
Watching you.
Yeah, that's our shed at the back. Yeah, so I like, before the lockdown, our shed has been out there since we moved into the house, and like it's been building up rubbish, like stacks. There was 2 tons of rubbish that we emptied into the dump just before the lockdown, and thank God we did, because otherwise we would not have the facility we have there. And when we actually went rummaging through everything, we found out that we actually had weights that we never even knew were there. So I've been lucky, in fairness, that I've found like a squat rack and a bench and the whole lot, and then I got a boxing bag off my club when they closed. So we've just set it up and we have a ping pong table and stuff, so we haven't been bored, which is good. A lot of people will be very bored at home, but for me, like, I have my brothers and sister there to keep me occupied as well, and we're out there training every day, so it's great. Like, I am really loving it, and the weather's been so good and everything, so a lot of my work I'm doing is outside, like, so I've been blessed, to be fair.
Yeah, I think we're all coming up with creative ways, basically.
Everyone's adapting in different ways, like.
Yeah, exactly. Let me kind of take you back then to your success in the summer, where you won bronze at the 2019 European Games in Minsk. This is kind of a two-part question, really. First off, ultimately, what was that like? Because that's, I suppose, ultimately your biggest success so far. But then, considering what's happened to you in 2020 and what could still happen, how do you get that momentum back up to where it was before?
Yeah, that's a good question. So to answer your first question, yeah, Minsk was unreal. Like, it was like my best experience ever in any sporting event, because it was my first time to go to a mixed sport event. So I'd been to like Worlds and Europeans and all that, but it's always just boxing. So for this, it was obviously male and female, and there was like, I don't know how many different sports, there was over 10 anyway, which was great, because you have, you know, athletes coming from all different backgrounds, and it's good to share your stories and stuff, because usually it's all just boxing. So the whole thing, the athletes village, everything, it was just such a cool experience. And then obviously to have three tough fights and come out with a medal as well was the cherry on the top of the cake, really. But what was your second part of the question again?
It was basically doing what's happened, how do you get the momentum back to where it was before?
Yeah, I actually just saw an interview yesterday, one of the girls on the team as well was just saying, you know, everyone will have lost sharpness throughout this lockdown, which is completely true, because the only way you get your sharpness is from sparring and from fighting and competition, whereas, you know, you can be hitting a bag all year and never really improving. You never know until you get in against someone to see if things are working. So, yeah, it is going to take a bit of time to get back up and running. And, you know, in terms of competition, like, we'd need a good bit of, you know, we'd need a lot of notice beforehand in order to make sure that we're able to spar and get ready properly, because there's no point in going to a competition if you're not 100% either. So I think it's just going to be a waiting game. I think the fact that everyone is in the same boat, like, I found it more difficult when I was injured, because everyone else was flying fit and I was just in the wings watching it all, really. But for me now, it's not as tough, because I know everyone is struggling in the same way as I am. So I think it just makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, before it built up to the European Games, is it something you actually felt in yourself that you, I suppose the right way to frame it is, like, in your flow, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
That was at your peak, and whether that was hard to get to that stage in the first place. But now that you've
of course.
You do it again.
Yeah. Pre-fight camps are always so tough, like, but we always make the most of it as well. We always have good crack, and we'd have a camp. Say, for the European Games last year, we had a camp in Belfast, and like India, USA, Romania, Italy. There was a good few countries there, and it was the men were there as well, the men's teams too. So it was brilliant. And like, when you're around that many athletes chasing the same dream as you, it really pushes you, I think. And then you have really competitive kind of basically test matches against the other countries, against people who you could potentially be fighting. So, yeah, like, the momentum to get there when you actually go to a competition, you're at peak fitness, you've tapered a little bit before you go, everything. So everything is literally monitored to finer details. So, yeah, it is going to be tough, especially being injured and then lockdown. It's going to be nearly twice as hard. But like I said, everyone else has been pushed back a little bit, so it kind of makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, everyone's in a similar position, aren't they? You mentioned there about having all those other athletes around you that kind of helps push you, but obviously we don't have that in the same way now. Is it something you try, and I don't know whether it's talking to other boxers or other athletes and maybe using what they have to say as added motivation? Because certainly speaking from my experience, when it's the same scenery every day, your motivation can go up and down on a, if not daily, hourly basis.
Of course, yeah. And like, at the start of all this, I found it tough to kind of adapt to being at home all the time. So much free time, you know, not as much routine as if we were in camp. But, you know, everyone is in the same boat. And I think, you know, seeing people improvising on social media with their equipment, like you see people doing squats, having two bins hold up the bar and all different things. Like, it is cool to see how people have been improvising in the circumstances that it is. But yeah, everyone is going to be looking forward to getting back. But like, for me, I've been watching, like, say, the Last Dance documentary and, you know, the Rocky movies, little things like they always spur your motivation as well. So on the bad days where you don't feel like training, or you're feeling just fed up with the whole thing and you need to get back to routine, they're the days that I'll watch little things that kind of trigger me back to where I need to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that's quite interesting, actually, is the whole, because everyone's obviously talking about Netflix and so many people have signed up to it, but there's actually a lot of good TV on there that you can use to motivate yourself.
Yeah, really educational stuff too. Like, even, you know, the whole, did you watch Icarus? It's the documentary about the Russian, you know, the doping that the Russians did, basically. So there's loads of stuff sporting-wise that you can really educate yourself on. And yeah, I've been trying to do, obviously I do watch like Money Heist and a couple of different things for leisure. But yeah, no, The Last Dance is definitely the best thing I've watched, and it's really, really motivational.
Yeah, I did watch The Platform, which I don't really recommend. So
no.
That was a strange one. If we kind of rewind back then to essentially a 16-year-old you, and we essentially find someone with no boxing experience, and no boxing career at that stage anyway, and you're actually playing football for Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah.
So could we have seen Gráinne Walsh, the footballer, rather than the boxer?
That was the childhood dream, to be honest. Yeah, there was, you know, most of the people that I box with now have their families are involved, their parents, grandparents, uncles, everyone has been fighting for years. So it's kind of a natural progression for them to get into boxing. But for me, it was kind of, you know, seeing Katie Taylor when I was growing up playing football, saw her in a footballing background, and then I just followed her from football, followed her into the boxing, but never wanted to try it. Never really had the courage to try it, to be honest. I never thought it'd be any good. So soccer was just kind of what I knew, or football. But then, yeah, it came to 2012 when she came home from the World Championships after winning her fifth world title. And then she was coming down to open the club that was literally across the road from my house. She was coming down to like cut the ribbon, and there was posters all over the town. So I was obviously a super fan back then. So I was like, right, it was the first summer where I wasn't playing in a summer soccer league either. So I was like, right, I'm going to show my face here, you know, maybe train for a couple of weeks, keep my fitness up while I'm not playing soccer. And then when the soccer season comes back, I'll just bin off the boxing really and go back playing soccer. So that did happen, but I never binned off the boxing. It just continued. It was a natural progression to keep going with it. I loved it and everything. So meeting Katie Taylor obviously gave me the bit of a push I needed to join the club and, you know, take that first step. So yeah, I've obviously a lot to thank her for. And yeah, that was like, soccer was the dream back then. I wanted to move to England, play with Arsenal. That was the dream as a kid, but it's quickly turned around. Here I am, 24. No soccer for all now.
No, but I mean, what you say about Katie Taylor, I mean, she knows, needs no introduction. We've talked about her plenty of times on this show before, and how, not just what she represents in boxing, but what she really represents for women's sport and sport in general, to be honest. But you mentioned there about not originally thinking you could be any good at boxing. So what is it about Katie Taylor that kind of flip that in your mind to actually thinking, okay, like, let's give it a go at least and see what happens?
So basically, meeting Katie Taylor gave me the courage to first start boxing. And then I think behind every great boxer is a great coach. And I met my coach, Dima. I met him the first day. He's a Russian guy. He's been living in my hometown though since, I don't know, the last 15 years or something. But yeah, I met him on the first day, and I think, like, you know, we just really gelled, and he could see something in me from an early age that, like, I never knew would turn into anything. But I just enjoyed the training side of it, and it actually really helped my soccer. Like, so obviously soccer is completely lower half, your legs really strong and everything, but I never really lifted weights or did anything for my top half. So I was getting physically stronger on my top half when I was boxing. So they really did complement each other. So that was kind of just how I kept going with the two of them. And then I just ended up giving up soccer, which I never ever thought I would do, because it was my life. Like,
without your coach, essentially telling you that you were good and had potential? Is it something you would have followed?
I would have done it from an enjoyment point of view, and I don't know where it would have led, but I think you need someone like that to believe in you, like to actually make you believe in yourself from the start, and then you kind of get to a stage where you actually see yourself having the potential that other people might see as well. So I definitely owe a lot to him, and he's still my coach to this day. He's an Irish coach too, so I've been very lucky all through my career.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is something we've touched on with quite a few of our female athletes who've been guests before, and they've, I suppose, spoken about how they've needed that female role model somewhere in their life. Katie Taylor, obviously, for you. But obviously before that female role model actually appears, then there's kind of a vacuum there sometimes. I know you mentioned before about having like Cristiano Ronaldo as your football soccer idol. But with basically the moment Katie Taylor comes along, is that something you at that time in your life needed?
I think so. And I think, like, people always say, oh, everything happens for a reason. And even with my thumb injury, I think everything happened for a reason. It gave me the opportunity to improve my left hand. And then obviously now this lockdown has given me so much time to break the smaller things down. So I think every cloud has a silver lining. And the same with the whole Katie Taylor thing. Like, when she came along into my life, basically it was the perfect time. And I was 16, I was just getting started, and within 4 years I was on the team with her going to the next Olympic qualifier for her to try and qualify for Rio. So I just kind of took it in 4 year blocks, you know, and I've been kind of doing that ever since. So I'm hoping that the next 4 years is full of surprises as well.
Yeah. Does she know the influence she's had on you?
Yeah. Like, we used to joke about it and that, like, when we were on the team, oh my God, it was so embarrassing. When we were on the team coming home from Kazakhstan, she had a bronze medal, I hadn't medaled, but we were coming through the airport, and my ma and dad were like, and my family were more excited to see Katie coming home than they were to see their own daughter. So they ended up, you know, meeting Katie and got a photo with her and everything. And then she was like, my ma was like, oh, Katie, you'd want to see Grania's room with all the posters of you in the room. And I literally was mortified. Like, you know what I mean? When your ma just steps in with a comment, like.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Katie knows, but like, she's had, you know, it's not just me, she's had a massive effect on it's women everywhere. It's not even women, it's just people in sport. I think she's just set the bar so high, and she's encouraged a lot of people to take that first step.
Yeah, that's what I mean by she almost transcends her sport.
Yeah,
with her,
yeah, 100%. And obviously being Irish and stuff, I felt like there was more of a connection there. So
yeah, exactly. And I mean, she's not the only one paving the way in your sport either. I mentioned Stacey Copeland several times, because she was one of our earlier guests on this podcast, and it's all about sort of helping change perceptions, really.
Yeah,
not
100%.
Just boxing, just it can be football as well, because you only have to have a quick flick through Twitter to see that, you know, the arrogant, ignorant comments are still out there. Is that anything you've had to face hostility from, whether it's on social media or people around you at home?
Not massively, no, thank God. It's not really been, like, I suppose there is a certain amount of it, but not too much, thank God. Like, I think it comes with the bigger following you get, and, you know, the more success you have, and it just gives people more of a chance to criticize, because there is these keyboard warriors just sitting at home wanting to just pick flaws out of nowhere, basically. So I don't know, it is hard, and it's easy for people to say, oh yeah, don't listen to it and stuff, but like, everyone is human and we're not all made of stone. So like, you know, words do hurt. And I think, like, you know, Stacey's great advocate of what you know, she's trying to get that kind of message out there as well, and I have a lot of respect for Stacey. But I think it's like every woman in sport, and even men as well, just getting together and just getting that word out there a bit more, that these Twitter people just need to calm the hell down.
Yeah, seconded. I would definitely back that one, and they seem to have a lot more time.
Yeah.
Is that something you see yourself as, whether it's a role model for others or someone to also similarly pave the way?
Yeah, I think it just kind of comes with the lifestyle, really. Like, I think, you know, for a young girl like me when I was 16, you know, looking up to the likes of Katie Taylor, who completely dedicated her life to the sport, was so disciplined, you know, no partying, drinking, any of that kind of stuff. I think it is important for young people to have a role model like that as well. And I'm not saying I'm the best role model, like, everyone has their flaws, but I think just coming from, it depends on the person themselves. So if they're looking for a lifestyle like mine, you know, full-time athlete training all the time, it's a great life. Like, and people all say, oh, do you miss partying and drinking and all? Like, no, you don't, because you know, people don't remember their nights out when they get smashed, but I'm remembering being in all these different countries representing my country. So it's just kind of, it comes down to what you really want, to be honest. So I think my friends have all just accepted that I'm different.
which is fine to be. If something that I saw this week, and I cannot for the life of me remember who said it, which is a little bit annoying, but it was someone who was basically Muslim in their sport. But because they were Muslim in their sport, they were constantly asked about being a Muslim in their sport. Okay. Even though they just wanted to concentrate on their sport and not actually talk about all of that stuff. And I don't know if that's something that comes across with being essentially a female boxer, in that if you want to just be a boxer, you've almost got to take that along with you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense in what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I get you.
That can be, I don't know, not so much a distraction, but something that you similarly have to focus on, whereas, say, a male boxer wouldn't have to necessarily contend with those questions.
I think the stereotype of boxing being a male dominant sport is definitely changing. Like, obviously London was the first Olympics that women were actually included in, and then the quality was just next level. So I think it opened a lot of people's eyes to, you know, that women can do just as well as men. Now, saying that, I do think there is a difference in terms of, like, say when I'm coming up to a competition, I'd spar with guys who are lighter than me, because men are just naturally stronger, fitter, fast. It's just in you know, the genetic makeup of people. Like, I think it's great for women to spar against men further out from competition, because they're, as I said, they're stronger, they're faster, so you'd be extra sharp against a woman. So coming up to competition, like a week or two in your last couple of spars, spar with women, because essentially that's what you're going to be fighting. So, but I definitely think that, like, in the last couple of years, the whole stereotype has really just changed, and people don't, obviously there's the odd person who sees it as, oh, men and women or whatever, but like, it's just boxing really. Like, and I remember Stacey saying stuff like that as well. It can be frustrating when people, you know, kind of look down on you because you're a woman fighting or whatever, or you get the odd people saying, oh yeah, sure, you're only a woman, you wouldn't beat me, you know, this kind of rubbish. But you know, it is definitely changing. I think the true boxing fans and the true sporting fans can see that, you know, there's not much difference at all.
Exactly, yeah. And I suppose one of the other things to mention in terms of the female side of the sport as well is one Hannah Rankin mentioned to me when I interviewed her a while back. And I suppose it mainly comes down to the finance side of things and how much of a challenge it can be to balance that, whether it's trying to get tickets sold, people through the door, and organising your bouts in the first place. Is that something that's been a particular challenge at all for you, or has it become a lot easier as time's gone on?
Yeah, see, it's a bit different in the amateurs compared to the pros, and it kind of differs, I suppose, as well in each country, because each country has a different, you know, we have Sport Ireland looking after us. So for us, it's not, a man gets this much or a woman gets this much. It's if you bring home a certain colour of medal, you get that funding for that year. So I think it kind of differs a little bit regarding on the country. And then when you're a pro, obviously starting out, I think in order to have a really successful pro career is to have a good amateur career. Like, you see the likes of Katie Taylor, such a massively decorated amateur. She's being minded, wrapped in cotton wool by her promoters and her managers and everything as a pro, and she's making great money. But in terms of where, if I turned over pro now, you wouldn't have that same, you know, you wouldn't have that. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I just don't think you would really be as minded as much, because in the pro business, it is about making money. Like, that's exactly it. Your promoters and your managers are there to make the dough as well. So I think it's nearly like a different sport in a sense, the way things are run in the pro game compared to the amateur. Like, when you turn pro, you're representing yourself, whereas when you're amateur, you're representing your country more so. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Is it something you'd want to revisit, whether it's in the next couple of years or 10 years down the line, whatever it might be?
Turning pro?
Mm.
Yeah, I've said this in a couple of interviews too. Like, you know, at the minute, I'm not in no hurry to turn pro. I'm 24, so I still feel I've a lot to give in the amateur game. And, you know, my dream at the moment is to get to the Olympics. So we'll see. I'd say come 2024, I'll have a think about that more so. But, you know, offers obviously on the table and stuff kind of make you think as well. But at the moment, I'm in no hurry to turn pro. But it definitely would be something I'd look at in the future, you know, hoping that I have a really good amateur career. So that's kind of the dream I'm chasing at the moment, is the Olympics and succeeding in the amateur game.
Hello, listeners. We're here to take a quick break to mention something very important. Max Hunter was a huge supporter of the Mintridge Foundation, our charity partner, and was a huge believer in sport as a tool for positive change. He died by suicide in August 2019, aged 28. Of course, we know the potential sport has to boost your mental health and how important it is to open up and have an honest conversation if you ever need to, but it is never that straightforward. That's why the Mintridge Foundation have created the Max Hunter Fund, to encourage everyone to acknowledge their feelings on a regular basis. This also coincides with a very special event, the 28 Not Out panel, which is on July the 10th. We will be hosting a live panel all about mental health and sport, featuring England rugby international Dan Cole. The panel, which we will be streaming over Zoom, will also feature psychotherapist and counsellor Gemma Saggers, Liam Durkin from the Papyrus Prevention of Young Suicide charity, and also Dan Griffin from Stamford Rugby Club, who was a great friend of Max. As part of 28 Not Out, there will also be 28 hours of non-stop fundraising that weekend. Tickets for the Mental Health Live panel are just £2.80, and details are available on Eventbrite. You can find the link on our social platforms and also in the show notes of this podcast episode. So please join us over Zoom for this very important, very special day, all in memory of Max Hunter. Thank you. You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players Podcast.
One big question to fire at you. Since you first got into boxing to where you are now, what do you think is the biggest thing you've learned about yourself?
Oh, that's a great question. The biggest thing I've learned about myself is, well, coming from, you know, a soccer background, the biggest thing I've learned about myself is that hard work and discipline pay off, because when you are in soccer or whatever, like there's 10 other people on the team that you have to depend on and, you know, expect to have the same work ethic as yourself. So I just think with boxing, it just appealed to me more about the self-discipline, the hard work on your own that no one sees. Like, people only see, when you're boxing, people only see your arm at the end getting raised or not, whereas there's so much that goes with that. So I think, you know, hard work and everything just really pays off, and being self-disciplined and having people believe in you. I just think believing in yourself is a massive thing as well. Like, mentality in boxing is probably the biggest thing. Like, you can train till the cows come home, but in terms of, like, if you don't have the bottle and in your mind, if you're not stable going into a ring, you won't be able to show your hard work that you've done. So, yeah, there's a couple of different things there, like mentality, believing in yourself, and hard work. It'd be kind of to put into a nutshell, but...
Yeah, that mentality thing strikes me as something that's so, so important. Was that believing yourself something that just came naturally to you at the start, or was it essentially something you've had to build?
It's something I'm still working on, to be honest. Like, it's not, you know, people think that you're kind of bulletproof when you're going into a ring. Like, you need, you know, serious nerves to get into a ring on your own. When you get into a ring on your own, there's no one to help you. You have your coaches roaring things at you from the corner, but essentially it's you against another person and a referee in between you. But, you know, it does, there are little things I still have to work on now with my psychologist and everything. Like, I think people who let on, like, they don't get nervous and stuff, I don't think are telling the full truth, or else maybe there's a freak of nature. But for me, you know, I get nervous before every single fight, and I've no problem admitting that. I've just accepted that as a part of the process. As much as a warm-up is part of the process, me getting nervous is a part of that process as well. I've just accepted that. So, yeah.
But it's almost something that some people have said they need those nerves to fight.
Of course, yeah. 100%. That's why it can work, you know, against you or for you if you can control them. But if you let the nerves get the better of you, that's when you're in trouble. So, like I said, I just accept it as part of the process. I know I can nearly write down the exact time where I'm going to get those nerves, and it's never been any different. So I think that's just, you know, a part of me getting into the ring. It's never going to be any different.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the what you said before about liking boxing because of the hard work, the discipline side of it, and the fact that it's, I suppose, essentially you focusing on yourself, does it then... It's one of the biggest things to manage, I suppose, trying not to burn yourself out and go so hard one way that it becomes detrimental to what you're trying to do for yourself.
Yeah, you always hear athletes talking about, you know, kind of overtraining is worse than undertraining. Like, you're better off to be a little bit undercooked than overcooked. So it's the same with us going to competition. The very same thing applies. I think at the start, it was maybe a little bit more difficult to manage, but now everything is just so closely monitored with us. Our coaches and the support staff and stuff are keeping an eye on every single thing. They tell us exactly how and when to taper, so, and they're doing all these tests and stuff, testing like our blood levels and all that kind of thing. So everything is monitored, which makes it a lot easier because you have a full team around you. You have athletes who may be, you know, different weight categories and stuff, but they're still teammates who are doing the very same thing as you. So I think that definitely, you know, ties in with the whole thing. But yeah, it is easy to just, especially in lockdown, like, we've been warned not to overtrain because there is no competition coming up. So this is a chance for us to bring the intensity down, like I said, work on the smaller things that we wouldn't usually get the time to, but are completely essential as well. So I think it's just about being smart as well and listening to your body, because if you wake up in the morning, you're sore, you feel like you need a rest day, take a rest day, especially in this kind of time, because like I said, there is no competition that we can see in the near future. So you need to just be smart and listen to your body.
Yeah. Likewise, when you've got no scheduling either, if you know your training session doesn't end at 3 now, because there's no routines really to speak anymore.
And the days and the hours just run into each other. I'm sure you can probably relate. It's hard to keep track of the days at all really during lockdown, but it's trying to keep some sort of routine in your life, even though we are all stuck at home.
Mm-hmm. Was that something that you managed to essentially formulate? Because I imagine it was tough at the start.
At the start it was tough. But when we had those kind of group sessions on Zoom and stuff, and I was hearing everyone else in the same boat, I kind of felt like, okay, right, I'm not the only one. And then we just kind of started getting sent... we've had a couple of sessions. We have a few sessions a week on Zoom, so they at certain times every week, so they obviously keep some sort of routine. And then I try to write out little things, like getting up, I'm not sleeping past like 9:30, 10:00. Still not that early, but you know, whereas if I came home at the weekend, if I was at camp all week, I could sleep till 12 because I'd be so tired. Whereas now I'm just making myself get up at a certain time and, you know, eating my meals and my snacks at the same sort of time every day. Because you can, your body just kind of shuts down if you let it, essentially. So it's just kind of keeping it on some sort of straight and narrow.
I think we've all definitely realised how important a routine is, isn't it? If
you
force something upon yourself, it just makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
My final couple of questions then. I mean, first one is, I mean, have you become a quiz expert like everyone else in lockdown at the moment? Or general knowledge?
Well, we've been kind of... Right, so I've obviously seen loads about the Zoom quizzes and Zoom bingos and everything. Like, I've, you know, met up with my friends on Zoom a couple of times, more just for the chat, because we just miss each other, like, more than just quizzing and stuff. Whereas now the restrictions are lifted a little bit, we're allowed to go for a socially distant coffee outdoors, and obviously the weather's been so good, so it's an excuse to get outdoors as well. But I don't know, like, at home with my family and stuff, I'm playing a lot of cards and board games and that kind of thing. Obviously, things that you wouldn't usually do as well, that we do them around Christmas, but, you know, it's kind of like Christmas every day now.
Yeah, and it helps that you got the Christmas decorations in the garage as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Mrs. Claus watching me train.
I mean, we've touched on this a little bit already, but I suppose my final question is about going forwards in the near future anyway, because there's no timetable. Is it essentially just plowing on, doing what you can for the time being. And if those, that mindset is still very much set for Tokyo 2021 now.
Yeah, 100%. I'm trying not to look too far ahead, but obviously now with the Olympics being postponed until next year, I have that little bit of time that, I don't know, gives you a little bit of confidence too, knowing that, you know, when the restrictions are lifted, that it's not going to be, right, get ready, you have competition next week. Like, that's not going to be the case at all. So, you know, what's keeping me going at the moment is little deadlines. Like I said, certain routines. I have a week written out every Monday of the sessions that I'm doing, of kind of the foods I'm eating, things, little things I'm doing, like say, whether it's an interview or whether it's, you know, an online class with people, you know, little things like that, just to keep the routine there. And then every, say, 3 or 4 weeks, we have a meeting with our boss to kind of, everybody's just checking in with everybody, and it's a big team meeting. It's just get to see your teammates too, even if it is through a screen. And then we're due back in Dublin in camp on the 10th of August. That's so far. So that could be brought forward a little bit, which would be great. But I suppose time will just tell. And then they're talking about competitions towards the end of the year. I don't know how realistic that is, but, you know, in the back of my mind, that's what I'm trying to aim for, because I need something to have in my mind to train for. It's hard to train for nothing, really. Do you know?
Yeah, it's almost nice then you've got, whether it's they come to fruition or not, have those dates to essentially work towards, really.
Yeah, whether they happen or not, it's something even mentally to just keep you motivated, keep you thinking that, right, I'll have a competition now in October, and that's what I need to be getting ready on, you know, because we have a certain amount of weeks then to plan. Like I said, with the whole, everything is measured between tapering and, you know, hard training and stuff, but it is hard at the moment because there is no sparring, and we'd be obviously used to sparring and stuff, so that bit of contact thing is the thing that everyone is missing. We're all missing getting punched in the face.
And on that note, that's where we bring this particular episode to an end. Thank you so much, Gráinne, for coming on.
Thank you very much, Alistair.
Enjoyed the chat. And likewise, I think this is a prime example of just how Zoom and technology kind of help bring a little bit of normality to the world as well. 100%. Keep the conversations going. And I'm sure everyone else who will listen to this, wish you the very best of luck when it comes to qualification for Tokyo 2021. We still have to get used to playing that, don't we?
I know, yeah.
And yeah, good luck with everything, and hope boxing eventually returns to some sort of normality along with the rest of the world.
Me too. Fingers crossed. Thank you very much for having me on as well. Thank you.
A huge thank you to Gráinne for chatting to us on this episode of the podcast, and we wish her well whenever we get back to some sort of normality and competitions return. Here's to Tokyo 2021. Thanks also go to KO London PR for helping us set up the interview as well. In terms of messages to send out, don't forget we have our very special event on July the 10th with the Mintridge Foundation, where we will be hosting a live mental health and sport panel over Zoom with England rugby and British and Irish Lions star Dan Cole. Information is on the Eventbrite link in the show notes. Likewise, our Mastermind competition quarterfinals are almost ready to share. Some questionable quiz knowledge, I have to say, but they are a good laugh, so it is the taking part that counts after all. If you enjoyed the show, please spread the word on social media and give us a follow on our pages. Our handles are SportsSpielPod, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, all of your usual ones. And don't forget, you can also drop us a line on our email address, which is sportsfieldpod@gmail.com. That's it from us this week, everyone. Look after yourselves, and you'll be hearing from us again very, very soon.